Solitude brings insanity and not penitence. Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tiny Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. And today's question is, what is solitary confinement? Ben, this sounds like a card game.
A card game.
A card game you play alone, right? Solitaire.
Yes. Solitaire, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, this
is a card game, you play by yourself.
Yes. So is that what we're talking about today?
Well, it's certainly not a game, and I would guess that most people who experience solitary confinement would not say that it is fun.
True.
But they would definitely say that they're by themselves.
Yes.
So solitary confinement is when someone is locked up in a cell by themselves.
And prevented from leaving, so you have no freedom.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like prison in prison. And a lot of times that's what people think, that solitary confinement is just that. We're locking people up in a cell by themselves.
Right.
But it's a lot more than just being alone. That's certainly a component of it. So when we think about the major characteristics of solitary confinement, physical and social isolation is one of those. And then the other major aspects of solitary confinement that we don't frequently think about is reduced activity and reduced stimulation, which refers to kind of the sensory things that we experience.
Ah, okay.
So solitary confinement is much more harsh, and it's much more austere.
Okay.
Bare walls, bland colors, lights are always on. There are more restrictions on possessions and belongings, more restrictions on education and work and activities that prisoners who are in solitary confinement can do, as opposed to prisoners who are not in solitary confinement, who are in gin pop.
Okay. So,
and that's an important aspect, particularly when we talk about later things like, mental health consequences, because I'm an introvert.
Yes.
I imagine you're an introvert.
Yes.
Yeah. And we enjoy spending long periods of time by ourselves.
Right.
But the key distinction is that we can be by ourselves for a long time, but we have things to occupy our time. We have Netflix, we have our phones, we have, nice views that we can look out our windows.
Walk outside.
Right, so we can do things to occupy our time, to pass the time, and enjoy time by ourselves. But that's not something that people who are in solitary confinement have the ability to do. It's, in a small cell, nothing to do, nothing to occupy your time. And then being by yourself for long periods of time.
Okay. Well, how do you get in solitary confinement? If this is something that happens in jails or prisons, what gets you there?
Well, first of all, it is kind of difficult and hard to figure out who's actually in solitary confinement, because a lot of times practices and rules, first of all, differ between every state, and then you can have informal practices differ between every prison. But in 2016, the Bureau of Justice Statistics estimated that, based on a 2014 restricted housing census, that between about 80,000 and 100,000 prisoners were being held in solitary confinement.
Okay, can I stop you right there?
Mm-hmm.
You said restricted housing. So how is that different from solitary? Is that the same thing you're talking about here?
Well, again, this is another difficult thing about studying solitary confinement and talking about solitary confinement, because a lot of the terminology differs, and there's a lot of different terminology. But most frequently when you hear the term restricted confinement, that refers to kind of the totality of the experiences of being in solitary confinement. So anyone who's locked up in a cell by themselves with the characteristics that I just mentioned, we might refer to as restrictive housing. It's more restricted than general population.
Okay, so those are kind of like administrative terms they use to distinguish between different types of confinement?
Well, there are really like four different categories of how you get isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that each one of those would be considered restrictive housing.
Okay.
So I guess I can just talk about
those. Yeah, go ahead and talk about that. I kind of got us away from how do you get there, but what maybe you want to back up and tell me how I'm going to get in solitary confinement if I'm in jail or prison.
Well, there are really four, maybe three different ways that you might end up in solitary confinement. We oftentimes think about solitary confinement or restricted housing for prisoners who get in trouble, who are in prison.
Yeah.
And that is really what scholars or practitioners might call disciplinary segregation or punitive segregation.
So I get into a fight.
Yeah, you get into a fight, you break prison rules, you get in trouble, you get written up for that, and a prison official who hears disciplinary complaints, rule violations, then decides, okay, for your punishment for breaking the rules, you're going to spend 15 days in solitary confinement.
You're
going to spend, 30 or 60 days. So disciplinary segregation is a limited amount of time that prisoners serve for rule violations.
Like the song 30 Days in the Hole.
30 Days in the Hole. I don't know that song. Yeah.
It was a song because the hole is slang for solitary confinement. Okay.
Yeah, keep going. Like on Orange is the New Black, they called it the shoe. So special housing unit. There are all kinds of slang terms and different terminologies that are used. And I think one of the points there is that, practitioners are trying to get away from the term solitary confinement because we recognize so many problems with it.
Okay.
But anyway, disciplinary segregation is probably what most people think of and probably what we're most familiar with. Then there's the term administrative segregation.
Oh, okay.
And that is segregation, restricted housing, solitary confinement that is determined by administrators or wardens. And it's oftentimes used for people who might be deemed too violent or too dangerous. So it's not necessarily for a specific violation, but wardens or administrators have the discretion to decide who might need to be in administrative segregation for undetermined periods of time. So this is a little bit more concerning than disciplinary segregation because it's at the discretion of the warden. There's not kind of like due process protections or oversights, and it can be indefinite. So it's not like a specified term.
Yeah, that sounds bad.
And then one of the more concerning to me is protective segregation. So you can end up in solitary confinement for your own protection. So if you have been the victim of an assault or a sexual assault in prison, or if you are evaluated to be at risk for sexual assault in prison. So for example, we know that gay and trans inmates are at particular risk and vulnerabilities of sexual assault. So oftentimes, prisoners will be put in solitary confinement, quote unquote, for their own protection.
Okay.
And, one of the concerns there is that we're putting victims in solitary confinement in the same conditions that we're putting, dangerous predators.
Yeah, they're being punished essentially for being a victim, right? If you consider solitary confinement a punishment, then you're protecting them, but also punishing them.
Or kind of like a proactive predictive, like you haven't been a victim yet, but you might be. So we're, going to put you in solitary confinement. And then the last idea is the notion of like supermax confinement, which not all states have that. But supermax confinement would be essentially your permanent housing assignment. So if you're assigned to a supermax prison, then your regular housing assignment is long-term solitary confinement for the term of your incarceration for full sentence.
So if it's a life sentence, that means forever?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, there are ways that you can have your custody score reduced and, long periods of time with good behavior, you can be moved out of that. But essentially, it's your housing assignment.
Is that 24 hours in a cell in Supermax? Does it vary?
It's typically 23.
Okay, so you get out 1 hour.
Yeah, most solitary confinement conditions allow you 1 hour of time outside your cell, but that oftentimes is in a cage where you're kind of shackled and cuffed outside. My grandparents were kind of informal vets growing up, and we boarded dogs, and we had like dog houses and what I call dog lots, like the chain link fence. Essentially, when you're in solitary confinement, you get an hour outside in a dog lot.
Gotcha.
A day.
Okay. That's a good visual that helps me. That helps me think about it. So I'm familiar with the harms of solitary confinement, but let's break it down for the listener. What are the issues that we have with this kind of solitary confinement?
Well, as you can imagine, being in solitary confinement for long periods of time can be pretty hard to deal with psychologically in terms of mental health. And that's the real concern, the mental health consequences, psychological consequences of solitary confinement. So Craig Haney, who is a psychologist, and he's probably the expert scholar in terms of solitary confinement, he said that there's not a single published study of non-voluntary solitary confinement lasting more than 10 days that failed to result in negative psychological effects. So there really is not a lot of controversy or mixed evidence that the research is pretty solidly clear on solitary confinement has bad mental health consequences, and particularly consistent kind of set of symptoms that psychologists refer to as solitary psychosis or prison psychosis.
That includes things like paranoia. I've heard inmates who have been in solitary talk a lot about paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the other mental health concerns? What are some of the other things that develop?
Mm-hmm. Anxiety and depression are pretty common. Tension, panic attacks, hopelessness, mood swings. Anger and rage is another mental health symptoms that, long-term isolation can reduce things like impulse control, can be associated with violent outbursts. Cognitive disturbances, which, means kind of like disruptions or disturbances in our thinking, short attention span, poor concentration, poor memory, perceptual disturbances, so disruptions and disturbances in our perception. So sometimes, people who've been alone by themselves for a long time will be hypersensitive to noise and smell and light, because again, we're not having our senses stimulated. So then when you do have your senses stimulated, it's kind of overwhelming and scary. Detachment from reality, even hallucinations related to all five senses. And then paranoia. So thoughts of people being out to get you, or this idea of like persistent ruminations on thoughts of violence. So you can imagine you're locked up by yourself. You're spending days, weeks, months by yourself. You don't have anything to do, and that can be depressing and anxious. So a lot of times you just sit there and you ruminate on feelings and thoughts of, revenge or vengeance or acting out. And then paranoia that is. And of course, most seriously, associations with suicide and self-harm. The Quakers instituted prisons and solitary confinement as a means of reform because they were concerned about, people who were committing crime being hung in the public square, beaten in the public square. So the thought was, okay, let's institute prisons as a more humane alternative.
Mm-hmm.
But they, operated that as solitary confinement and found that was not effective, and that was inhumane. And so, prison stopped that practice, but now we've
come back around. Okay. So is solitary confinement necessary?
Certainly there's a need to deal with violent, dangerous inmates in prison. And many people may default to the position that solitary confinement or restrictive housing is the solution for making prison safer and isolating dangerous people from other prisoners and staff.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like a good argument for solitary confinement.
Well, sure. But I think that many scholars would say that in the long run, there may be better ways to do that. That solitary confinement may not be necessary to do that. We certainly need to accomplish those tasks. Prison safety is an important thing that we need to be concerned about and do, but solitary confinement may not be the way to do that. There aren't really any studies that show that the practice of solitary confinement improves safety, and there's some indirect research evidence that shows that it can actually be harmful or decrease safety. So if you think about ideas of, you know, justice and fairness, and then obviously many people who go into solitary confinement have to come back out into general prison population, or even worse, come, you know, straight from solitary confinement back to society, that the, you know, harms of solitary confinement can lead to more problems adjusting back to gin pop or back to society.
Yeah, so you can make mental health problems worse, by the use of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also, you know, we can recognize that the practice of solitary confinement can be stressful for staff as well. So people that work in these conditions oftentimes are exposed to similar conditions to those who are incarcerated. So when we think about some of the kind of more extreme and bizarre behavior of prisoners that we see on shows like Lockdown, this is really where this occurs in long-term solitary confinement wings. So, you know, a quote from an article talking about staff stress dealing with working on a solitary confinement wing. You know, this staff member said, "When I see a human being who's reduced to throwing feces and urine, it wears me down. I'm breathing the same canned air, sitting under the same fluorescent lights, listening to the same noises. I don't believe this is good for officers or good for the prisoners." So we don't think about this, but, you know, it can actually be quite taxing on staff members as well.
Sure. Well, for our listeners, for those of you in Virginia, I did want to add that a recent development on solitary confinement in Virginia is that there is a bipartisan bill between Delegate Glenn Davis, who's a Republican from Virginia Beach, and House Minority Leader Don Scott, who's a Democrat from Portsmouth. And they have united to try and change the policy and end the use of solitary confinement in Virginia. They took a field trip, I think, to Sussex One, and one of those individuals had some experience personally with solitary confinement in a previous life. But the bill passed unanimously the House of Delegates, HB 2487, and it's supposed to go to state Senate, where there's a similar bill being proposed to eliminate it. Now, just to be clear, what they're doing is eliminating solitary confinement in the way that it's currently defined. So 4 hours per day are required outside of the cell. So that's the bill.
So let me get this straight. The bill is not changing like the conditions or the nature. It's just saying you get more time out of four hours as opposed to 1 hour out.
Yes, I didn't read the whole bill, but I don't think it's dealing with the conditions at all. It's just the amount of time that you have in cell. And another interesting aspect of Virginia is the way that they talk about solitary confinement. They call it restorative confinement. And by using the terms restorative confinement, it makes it sound fun, right? Restoring, like meditating or going to the spa. You're going to go to the cell and chill out. So yeah, so that's what's happening in Virginia right now. Okay.
But I mean, I think that's an important point that I kind of mentioned before, is that, you know, there's even a growing recognition among, you know, practitioners, among wardens and people who work and operate at prisons, that solitary confinement is not good, and they're trying to use terminology to kind of get away from that. So we've used the term solitary confinement a lot,
right?
But you won't see or hear that in a lot of, you know, policies and laws. It's going to be restricted housing or special housing or administrative segregation or these other terms that we've kind of talked and used about. So so people are trying to distance themselves from the idea of solitary confinement by using different terminologies. And in fact, the UN has declared that more than 15 days in solitary confinement is actually a human rights violation.
It's torture.
Yeah. And then on the other hand, you know, there are other state policies and practices in Virginia where states have tried to restrict the number of days in a row that you can be held in solitary confinement. So, and that oftentimes only applies for disciplinary segregation, which is only one form that we talked about earlier. But let's say that, you know, you get 30 days in disciplinary segregation.
Okay.
You would, like, go in and serve 15 days and then come back out and gin pop for 15 days and then go and serve your remaining 15 days.
Okay.
So I'm not sure that many of these have been implemented, but I think that these are some, you know, scholarly recommendations that we could think about still being concerned about prison safety in, you know, dangerous individuals while also trying to mitigate or reduce some of those harms, sure. psychological harms. So, you know, first of all, limit solitary confinement to only extreme needs for those who are, you know, violent or okay. perhaps in crisis, and only for the briefest possible term.
Mm-hmm.
So also another concern that we talked about earlier was administrative segregation that's oftentimes just up to the, you know, discretion of the warden or the administrators. So implement some due process and review, particularly of those administrative discretionary terms that aren't established by a disciplinary committee or hearing, but and rather people who are isolated for indefinite, indeterminate periods of time by okay. the administration. So implement some kind of, you know, due process regulations on how that can be used, how that's determined, in limitations on how long individuals can stay in administrative segregation. And then also it's really important, I mentioned the fact earlier that people are oftentimes coming straight out of solitary confinement back to gen pop or even you know, to the community. So some kind of therapeutic decompression program, you know, counseling or you know, some kind of service that can help people deal with the transition from total isolation to, again, being surrounded by people and stimuli that can be quite overwhelming.
Okay, so we have dangerous inmates and we need to isolate them from everyone else to protect the safety of other inmates. What are some ways that we can, you know, sort of mediate the psychological effects mm-hmm. of this if it's going to continue to be used mm-hmm. by some administrators?
So we can think about those, you know, characteristics of reduced stimuli that are particularly harmful mm-hmm. for, you know, causing some of these mental health problems. So allow isolated dangerous offenders to have access to the same materials. So, you know, for example, the types of books and the number of books in magazines sure. that, you know, prisoners can have in gym pop versus you know, forms of solitary confinement is quite different and much more restricted okay. and limited. So, you know, allow unlimited access to books and magazines and other things that, you know, people who are isolated could do to pass the time. Okay. Allow them to participate in programs or counseling. So, you know, perhaps if we are talking about dangerous, violent inmates, group counseling, group programs may not be the best fit, but some form of, you know, kind of individual counseling or consultation. You know, some staff interaction or, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Staff. Lots of recommendations yeah. there. Anything else you want to say about solitary confinement before we wrap up here today, Ben?
Yeah, I can lay in my bedroom or on my couch and play my PS4 for hours, even days on end, but
yeah,
you know, if I had to stay there with, you know, nothing on the walls, very small windows, no books, magazines, video games, cell phones, that would.
Yeah, that's different.
Yeah, that's different.
Okay, let's wrap this up.
All right, so to close our show, it's our Minute to Spin It, where we each give our 30-second takeaway from today's show. So Timey, in just a minute, what's your spin?
My spin today is that solitude brings insanity and not penitence. Ben, what's your spin?
Well, solitary confinement, and my dad used to say this when we would be getting on his nerves, me and my sister, but solitary confinement is enough to drive a wooden man crazy. And I think it's also important to recognize, as we talked about, that there are ways to deal with dangerous and violent prisoners without the harshest aspects of solitary confinement.
This podcast is sponsored by the Gandhi Center at JMU. Please see the show notes for links to articles and studies discussed on the podcast. Please also help us decide on what justice topics to cover by sending suggestions to our email at gandhicenter@jmu.edu or DM us on Instagram @gandhicenterjmu. Thanks for listening.